And they're going to be moving to the country in droves.
Oh,
so
wow.
I mean, clubs are going to play such an, not to come back and beat this dead horse, but clubs are going to play such an important role because of the phenomenon that's happening.
Yeah.
You guys locally should get organized and get a club and get a seat at the table so they don't take your right to ride away, which they will if they can.
Yeah.
If you let them, I should
say. Yeah, they will.
Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. My name is Barry Moore. My next guest is a great guy, and after our conversation, I got the sense that he'd rather be roasted than boasted. So here goes. As a young man, he always wanted to be cool on two wheels. So he founded a magazine dedicated to off-road motorcycles for the everyday rider in an attempt to drag down the public perception of cool. Unable to find anyone to print it, he created an e-magazine. As the years and the miles added up, he began to realize he needed to get the world to change its idea of cool once more. So he promoted the idea of old guys on bikes as the highest level of human achievement, worthy of admiration, respect, and most of all, desire. He put out a movie called 50 Years of Kicks, and fuck me, he was right. The fame and the celebrity the production caused forced him to a remote off-grid location where we communicate by satellite.
Right, boys.
Throughout the interview, there are some interruptions, so I hope the continuity of conversation lasts for you. He may very well be the only veteran dirt rider in Western Canada that has the skills to make me look competent. Coming up next, this is the head fromage of Traction E-Ride, a true sweetheart and an absolute reprobate, Dallas Shannon. Lots of boring stuff and whatever. Like, I try to polish it as best I can. If you're, for whatever reason, stammering a whole shit ton, I'll take that part out, make you look as professional as I can. But you've spoken in public enough. Everybody knows who you are.
Oh, yeah. I don't even care anymore.
Yeah, no.
I like the dumb look.
Yeah, it's better. It's easy to, like, I don't know. Like, I'm such a shit rider that it's easy to be impressive. If I was a better rider, then most of the time I'd look like I was riding like shit.
I guess it all depends on which way you look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, all the guys ride with me regular enough. They just expect me to fucking suck. So when I'm getting over the trees and keeping up, everyone's super, super stoked.
I hear you, man. They're all, I just have so many monitors here. I'm going to point it at the right one.
That's okay.
Is it going to be video or is it just going to be audio?
No. No, just audio.
Oh, shit. In that case, who cares?
Yeah, exactly. We could be in our underwear.
Yeah, I am in my underwear.
Oh, fair enough. That's good. The Zoom suit.
This is my daily attire. Okay, cool. Right. I'll just leave it on there.
Yeah. Are you the founder of Traction E-Rag?
I am. It's all my fault.
Yeah, well, someone has to be held accountable. It's definitely like in the dirt bike world, your magazine is so self-deprecating. It's awesome. You sort of poke fun at the whole community in a wonderful way. But how did you think to put that to print?
It all came from a period of time in 2006 and 2007, way back. I mean, that seems like yesterday and it seems like forever ago all at the same time. You'll remember that. You're old enough to remember that time.
Yeah, just barely.
Yeah, we were forced to read Dirt Bike Magazine and Dirt Rider Magazine. Those are the two big U.S. publications coming out of California.
Yeah.
And I grew up on those publications, and I loved them as a kid. But as I was an adult, and not only that, an adult that is in the publishing industry, I felt it did not represent at all what we did, not a bit. Like, it was based out of Southern California. It was very commercialized. I was very attuned to the idea that it's very commercialized. You know, basically that is a brochure for selling us bolt-on parts and the latest and the greatest motorcycle. And after a while, I started seeing that recipe and being like, man, this is not, we ride in the Canadian woods and have a ton of fun with our friends getting exhausted and hurt and muddy and, you know how it goes.
Yeah.
So what we wanted to do was create a publication that if we could bottle it up it would represent our experience on the trail. And that was joking around with our friends. It was all emotional, human relationships. We didn't sit around all day and talk about the bore and stroke and compression on my bike versus your bike. And it just, it was not an issue. So I was in the hard copy publishing industry at that time, and we decided, hey, let's do digital, mostly because we could afford to do it. So we just did it. So we call it Traction for obvious reasons, something that we never get enough of.
Yes.
And then we named it Rag for a shitty magazine. You know, that's what slang in the 50s, 60s, 70s. And then E for obviously electronic, because it was online. And that's where it was born.
So you guys have had like a pretty good run. Do you have any intention to go like into a paper, or it doesn't seem like it's a good choice these days anyway?
Yeah, like we were watching the print industry die, you know, one contract at a time. Everything obviously, you know, since the introduction of the smartphone, everything is digital. I think that we're not even going to be doing the magazine, you know, quote unquote magazine anymore. And the reason I say that is, one, we're getting tired of doing the magazine format. Two, people under 40 can't seem to read. I don't know what's going on in their education system, but they don't like reading, which I get, fine. So two, and then the third reason I think is that I guess our whole gang really likes the stories we can tell with video. So we've started putting way more effort into our YouTube channel.
Like everyone dancing around like idiots. It's awesome. Well, it's hard to imagine that side, just from reading the words. You can write it down, but like just to see everybody smiling as your camera passes by, like all that what dirt biking is, doesn't always get through in the written word. And I do like that you're not a bolt-on parts promoter. It does seem more like your magazine is rock and roll. Like you guys want to write about what it's really about and share that with people.
Yep. Because I was in the industry, I understood intimately how advertising was bought and sold and how advertising can infringe on editorial content. Like that was always forefront for us. So when we decided to do this publication or whatever the hell this is that we're doing, we decided that we weren't going to allow corporate interests to influence our content in any way. Okay. And the fights that we've had over the last 10 years, man, it's insane. In the dirt bike industry, like every industry, I guess, they absolutely flex with their advertising dollars. Mm-hmm. And if you do not comply or toe the line, first thing that happens is they're taking that away. First threat, we're going to pull the ads. So we've had all that happen to us. We've had advertising pulls. We've been blacklisted. You name it, because we won't play the game. And I know the game really well, so that's why I refuse to play it.
Fair enough. Now, you guys were just asking in your last newsletter if dirt biking has gotten too serious. Do you feel it's getting a little bit pretentious?
Man, I have a whole diatribe that I can rant about. I'm going to do a video about this. And I know Megs and I are going to talk about it live at some point. Barry and I as well, because we talk about this stuff all the time. We just don't record it and put it out there.
Yeah.
The way that I feel, this is my opinion, if you look at the timeline of dirt biking, so, you know, dirt biking really exploded in the 1970s.
Yep.
All the manufacturers were racing to put out these dirt bikes. Technology improved. Everyone was riding off-road with their motorcycles for the first time. It was the heyday. A whole bunch of publications sprung up around that time. And they were like our publication, which is like passion, joy, very little corporate influence, just for a small amount of time. Then what happened is, of course, the manufacturers realized this is the best way to sell our products. So we're going to start bribing, for lack of a better word, the magazines, or controlling the magazines with a little bit of food. And when we give them the food, they'll do what we say. So that's how those magazines, I feel, slowly transformed into the modern dirt bike magazine of yesteryear, because, you know, that magazine's, I don't even know if it publishes anymore, but I don't know anyone that reads a regular magazine anymore either.
No, it's hard to get your hands on. Like,
really. Yeah, maybe at Shoppers Drug Mart, they'll be on the stand. I have no idea. I haven't looked. Well, there's just so much. There's so much. So many other choices right now for free digitally. There's no need to buy, you know, a manufacturer's brochure. So anyway, to get on with the story. So that's when the manufacturers first sunk their teeth into the media. And what happens, you know, whenever you get in this situation where the manufacturers are paying for your existence, you're going to start tap dancing your ass off to give them exactly what they want or else. So we ended up with these media sources that are promoting. So here's what they do. They take racers and they put them on a pedestal. I'm just trying to think of racers of yesteryear. Think of all the motocross champs from yesteryear. I can't even think. Like, yeah. Ricky Carmichael is a good example. Everyone knows that word or his name. The manufacturers get the media to place Ricky Carmichael on a pedestal. And of course, he's a top guy. So of course, he's very accomplished. But the media places him on a pedestal. And in the magazines, they present him in a way that we should want to be Ricky Carmichael. So then we should be wanting to have all the bolt-ons that Ricky Carmichael. We want his boots and his helmet, the goggles that he uses, and the outfit if he's with Fox or O'Neill or whoever the hell he was with. So that's how it used to be done. The motorcycle media would present a racer as the king, and we would want to be that person. The problem is the majority of the riders are not racers. Like, we're a bunch of hacks that fall down in the woods,
yep,
desperately trying to stay on two wheels. And they don't represent us because I don't want to be Ricky Carmichael. The other thing that happens, weirdly, in this industry is that you are lucky enough to ride as a kid because your parents have got you a shitbox clapped out motorcycle, or somehow you saved up with your paper route to get one. You ride for a certain amount of time and then real life kicks in. So you need to get educated or a trade, or, you know, something needs to happen where you enter the workforce. And those early years are struggle. You know, you get 5, 6, 7 years of struggle to get yourself established. Then you usually meet a woman, and then she gets pregnant, you have children, and then all of a sudden you have a family. So you're super broke. So it's really hard to justify a dirt bike.
Yeah.
So what happens at that point is we leave the sport because we simply can't justify it or afford it at that point. So we re-enter the sport. We call them re-entry riders. Sometime in our 30s, the kids are 4 and 5, and it's like, man, the hard work's over. The diapers are done. And it's like, man, if I don't get a dirt bike, I'm going to blow my brains out. So you get one again in your 30s, you re-enter the sport, and the older you get, the less Ricky Carmichael appeals to you because he's 18 and crazy doing triples. And you're like, man, I don't see myself in that reference at all. Like, that's not like, you remember when freestyle motocross came out, I'm sure, like, you know, guys, it's like amazing to look at, but it's like, that's not going to be me ever. Ain't happening.
No, crusty demons of dirt.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the media wasn't doing anything. Like, I couldn't see myself in my 40s in these media publications. So, you know, once again, that's when social media, internet, it just opened it up where everyday riders or everyday heroes can tell their story. And, you know, that's example where 50 Years of Kicks came from, you know, watching
that's a wicked
old
movie.
Man Larry and old man Paul still riding in their 70s and their 80s. And we're like, that now that's something that I want to cherish and look up to. So that's the type of media that I want to produce.
That's a great movie. I identify more with them than I ever do with your version of Ricky Carmichael.
Yeah, just me too.
Happy to get on and happy to get off.
Yeah, man. That's why we made it, because we were surrounded by Larry and Paul. They were in our riding groups, or peripherally in our riding groups. And when you're 40, I want to look up and I want to look forward to the future. And when I see a 70-year-old man with a lot of spirit and laughing and carrying on and punching people in the staging area, I'm like, I want to be him someday.
Yeah.
He's my hero. Yeah. So it's like we decided to produce that just to give guys in their 40s some hope.
I probably watch that twice a year at least. If I'm an old ass man, lucky enough to be, then I want to be an old ass man slinging my leg over a dirt bike. I started dirt biking in my 40s. It's awesome. It's changed my life. My whole family's into it now. It's just insane.
Very addictive.
There needs to be more movies like that.
Yeah, I think we'll be doing more of that. Like, in the future. We're sort of, I've been a gypsy for a long time. So we're finally settled in Kamloops, BC. And,
Great place.
Oh man, happy to be here. It's just, it's an incredible place. It's like, I love it because the locals no longer, they take it for granted. They don't appreciate the fact that they were born and raised here. And I show up and I'm like, this is crazy. You guys are so lucky. And they're like, oh yeah, right. We are. And I'm like, yeah, man, yeah. I'm here to remind you.
Yeah. It takes like where I'm at, we're in the Bow Valley. It's super beautiful. And it takes somebody visiting for us to recognize just how amazing it is. Like seeing it all through their eyes sort of gives you the best chance you have to seeing again for the first time. And we do, we take it for granted. The Rocky Mountains turn into white noise sooner or later. And that's terrible. It's a crime.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, human nature. We're never satisfied, but, yeah, I mean, it is nice to, you know, that's what children do as well, right? Like they remind us of all the cool, interesting, curious things when you get to see it through their eyes again, be like, oh yeah, that is cool. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so, exactly.
So I'm going to be that guy for Kamloops.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great contribution. You know, when they talk about nowadays giving back to a community, I think that that's a wonderful gift, sharing with them how awesome it is. We went to Whispering Pines and it kind of rained a whole shit ton. We paid to go in advance and there was nobody there when we got there. We went flying around, falling in the mud, and they followed up, asked us how things were. And I was pretty honest with them. I was like, it was a great facility, cows on the course. That was kind of hilarious. And then, you know, but the kids had a hard time because they couldn't manage the clay kind of muddy stuff. But we were there for like 40 minutes. And so he refunded me the door fee and invited me back another time. And I was just like, wow, that's amazing.
The way to do business right there.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not in it for the money. Clearly he's in it to get in shit because all the houses around there hate the fact that there's a motocross course. So they sort of bracketed their hours, which is kind of unfortunate. And then there's a lot of like trail riding out there. That's pretty amazing. My wife and I got lost, you know, in a rainstorm. Seems like when we go there, it's raining and it's a freaking desert. It's never supposed to rain, but when we bring our bikes, it surely does.
Yeah. It's been weird weather here lately, but, yeah, it's incredible. Like the trail riding here is it's literally world class. I've been all over North America riding and it's world class. It's such a sweet hidden gem.
Yeah, man. And the trailheads are all well marked. Like it's great. The other one that's nice is by Kelowna. I can't remember the name of it.
Bear Creek.
Yeah. Holy crow. That's like a full on ski hill. If you get lost there, you're really trying hard.
Well done.
So impressed.
There's a club there that runs that area, and they do a really good job. Signage, trail maintenance, maps, the whole bit.
Yeah, so you're involved with cross-training enduro all the way in Australia. How did that happen?
Barry and I met on a digital dating site.
That's awesome. Classic.
I was following Barry. He had an old channel called Secret Garden Project back in the day. Yeah, nobody knows this. And we had the E-Rag, which was, you know, if you didn't, you know, our byline is either you get it or you don't, because we just didn't market us. Either somebody sent you an email and said, check this silly shit out or not. And that's how we grew. And then somehow he found out about us. And I don't know if I emailed him or he emailed me, but he said, I really like what you guys do. And I was like, oh yeah. And he said, I make videos. I'm just like, oh, great. You know, like some home movie thing. And then he sent me send me the link. And he sent me the link. And I was like, I fucking love you, man. Cause when he sent me, I already followed his media. And it just aligned so well with us. It was us running across a sunny field in slow motion towards each other.
Yeah, you guys are peanut butter and jam. my God. He has the same attitude of self-deprecation, like calling himself a Muppet and a Gumby all the time. And it's just it's perfect. He's cool because he's not cool.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Australians and Canadians are just like so compatible.
Yeah, I'm going to have an interview later today with a podcast from Australia. And they are, like, hands down, the biggest idiots in the best way. Like, yeah.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Just like us. Just different.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Like, Captain America can live south of the border. you know, whatever. Yep. And we're just more like the support team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we started working together, you know, quote unquote, working yep. together, just talking a lot, figuring out ideas, things we like, don't like, possibilities of what the future could look like. And I don't know, that was probably 6 or 7 years ago now. And we're slowly sort of building our brand and getting more people paying attention to what we have to say.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been a great relationship. We talk a couple times a week, and he's been in Canada a lot, like
yeah.
almost every summer since that first year we met. He's been over here, and we've been going around sort of feeling our way through the dark. I love the fact that Barry never shows his face. It's not about him. That's the main reason he does it. He doesn't want it to be about him.
And you guys put on the clinic every year, like Grisbait. And how's that going? Like, did 2020 screw that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We shut everything down last year just because it was, you know, we have a international customer base. So, like,
yeah.
people come from all over the world to ride with us. And as soon as the border got shut down, we essentially got shut down. So we just decided to go into our little hole and hang out and make content for most of 2020. Yeah. We're still waiting to see what happens for 2021 because our border is still closed.
Yeah, and it does appear to be that that's the future. Like they keep selling us hope because they don't want us all to like revolt and tear down the walls. But I think that, it's going to stay that way. None of the provincial governments seem too willing to lift up any of the restrictions they put on the people. Some places is getting more strict, even though COVID's going in the right direction. So I expect 2021 to be pretty much like 2020 summer. Gonna get in a lot of riding with a very few group of people, like very small group of people.
Yeah, I'm afraid that that's probably going to be the case for us. So we're probably going to focus on Canadian stuff, just doing like smaller events, shorter days, you know, basically less cost because Canadians, a lot of Canadians won't pay to ride their backyard, which I think is a mistake, especially if you're coming from other places than the West, because as you know, from being here, it's epic. It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's so different than anywhere in Canada. So it's worth the trip. That said, I understand that West Coast riders won't pay to ride in their own backyard, nor should they.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, other than being able to suggest like a destination in an area, most guys could just show up someplace and just ride and have a good time, like pick your own adventure kind of thing. So, but I do see the value in a guided route. Like that's why I race, because some guy takes the time to flag out a pretty epic course. And, you go ride through the mountains and you end up on the top of some, you would have not maybe gone to that space on your own. But, in that setting, it seems like the most natural thing to do. And then I guess I pay for that.
Yeah, for sure. And, like for the Western guys, I think the training still represents good value. Like we do tons of training. And, what I say to Canadians is that we all grew up learning how to skate and we all grew up learning how to play hockey, or at least the rules. And, nobody teaches us how to ride a dirt bike. We just get on one and go. Sometimes it's ugly.
Yeah.
What I learned from meeting Barry and an international community of riders is that that's not how it's done in other countries. Most countries don't have the freedom that we have here, where we park in a parking lot, we unload our bike, and then we leave and we don't come back for 7, 8, 9 hours, like as long as we want to be out there. Yeah. And we'll never ride the same trail twice. Like you can just go endlessly. Other countries are not like that. Usually it's designated riding areas that are quite small. And what happens is they get bored. So what they do instead is they start doing skill development. So they become better and better and better riders because they have nowhere to ride. And you and I, we are just like, yeehaw, for 9 hours.
Yeah.
And, we never see the same trail twice. We never seen the same ledge twice or rocky uphill. Usually our thought process is, whew, I made it. Whew.
Yes.
Nice. Next.
Yeah. We're lucky to survive. Yeah. We get ourselves down a trail into a situation we never trained for, so to speak.
No.
And that's our training moment,
And what they do is because they only have one rocky hill, They go up and down that same rocky hill 50,000 times, and they get really, really, really good at going up rocky hills. Like, they learn a lot. They get better just through repetition.
Birch. I can't remember his first name for the life of me right now. But he was camping. Chris Birch, yeah. He was camping beside a good friend of mine. And he was saying just that, that the only way to get good at it is to find a little circuit that you enjoy and then ride the piss out of it so that you start to learn all the obstacles. And then every time you see them sort of in the wild, you'll know how to take that obstacle. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours on a same little like half kilometer loop is more valuable than hundreds of hours on hundreds of kilometers, because you're sort of taking the same obstacle in a brand new way every single time instead of learning a technique. I might have butchered it. I wasn't sitting at the campfire. Essentially, that's what I got out of the retelling of the story.
The same concept has been told to me by international riders over and over. Yeah. I was fortunate enough to be in Italy for a beta release, and there were Swedish riders there. And I thought I was just holed up. I shared a cab ride. That's what it was. I was with a Swedish dude that could speak English quite well. And he told me, because I was like, wow, Sweden, man. That's Husqvarna, like the birthplace of Husaberg. And like, wow, what pedigree. Like, I was so excited. And he's like, it's not what you think. And I'm like, what do you mean? Because Sweden, like, you think like these huge forests.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, they're not allowed to have a motorized vehicle on public land in Sweden. So he's like, no, we can't ride those forests. And he said, we just have riding parks that are like 2 kilometers by 2 kilometers, and that's it. So that's why there's so many great riders come out of Sweden, not because they ride in the woods, because they can't ride.
2 kilometers by 2 kilometers sounds like a huge place, but on a motorcycle, that's nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I would be so disappointed if I had to ride 2K by 2K. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Literally, it'd be like having the internet and only being able to make it to one web destination.
Yep. Welcome to AOL.
Yeah. Jesus. Oh, that's crazy.
So I was surprised to hear that from Sweden.
You've ridden with a lot of great riders, I imagine, throughout the years. Is there anyone who stands out as like a favorite riding companion?
I don't ride with them. Okay. I ride way behind them.
Yeah. That's proximity, whatever.
Yeah, I'm in the same province.
Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah, the same general area. But yeah, no, I have been fortunate enough to meet and be around guys that are amazing. And yeah, it's just on a different level. That's what opened my eyes to realize, like, you know, as Canadians, the hockey analogy, again, it's like we produce great hockey players because we learn, and learn how to play hockey at a very young age. Yeah. And there's all these like feeder systems and competitive like triangles to improve or create a situation where the best of the best continue to go up the food chain.
Yeah, they're supported all the way.
Yeah, and they come from countries where the same thing occurs on motorcycles. And that doesn't happen here in Canada because we're not a motorsports culture at all. The best motorsports culture in this country come out of Quebec. I don't know if you spent much time there.
No,
but
not really.
Talk about super crazy power sports people, man, like a passion for power sports. You've never seen anything like in Quebec. It's crazy. It's so fun. The society there embraces power sports.
Yeah.
And it's completely different than everywhere else in Canada in that respect.
Oh, yeah. I've only been there as a young guy drinking and whatnot. Yep. I never really explored it. Yeah. Well, not Hull, but yeah, I went to Montreal. But the standard tête carré, like, you know, squarehead, go there, get drunk, make an idiot of myself. But yep. It's good.
We've all done that. Yeah. Montreal, Hull is right across the – is that
– the bridge, yeah.
Yeah, and the drinking area or the drinking limit there was 18.
Yeah,
and of course in Ontario, and it's 19.
Yeah,
so
kids would go. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But I'm in Alberta; it's 18 here.
Is it 18? So, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, there's not a lot of people from BC taking advantage the way the people of Ontario do, because it's the drive, right?
Yeah. Plus, yeah. In BC, I feel. It's so remote and rural here. You can just get away with anything anyway.
The E-Rag is basically just going to move more to video and less to typing, which makes sense because of the world we're in. Does that mean you're going to be putting out content quicker or?
Yeah, we right now we've got weekly videos scheduled on YouTube right through until the end of July.
Okay.
So whatever, however many videos that is. And Barry and I work in the background and we produce everything and then we schedule it. So I think he's putting out two a week and we're putting out one a week. And then Megs is on the bandwagon. We should talk about Megs because she's a big part of what we do as well.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think we'll have more content. And then since we're grounded here in Kamloops, like we actually have a HQ or a base, that allows us to put even more content out. Like we're going to have a lot of people through the doors here and lots of content creators, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did the relationship with Meg start?
Yeah. So what happened was she was an up and coming, I hate to use the word freak. That's not the right word, but it's close.
Yeah,
like,
I get it.
She's 5'2" female who rides enduro bikes well. And it's like, that is freakish. We met her because she likes creating content. So when we were running an e-reg, she would email us and we would email back and forth and be like, yeah, you're a cool chick, man. Like you got some stuff going on and you can write and you can take pictures. Like she's got a real nice package of stuff she could do. We ran Grizzbait in 2014 in BC and we said, hey, we'll meet you over there and you can help. And she took our group. She guided our group into Bear Creek, her local riding area in Kelowna. So she did that for a day. We met, her and I hung out in a, in my dirty, filthy, gross truck in a dirty, filthy Tim Hortons somewhere in Kelowna in the parking lot. And I was like, what are you going to do with this? And she was like, I don't know. And I'm like, we should do something cool. And then it was just, from that point on, it was just talking all the time about media and opportunity and content and where the world was going and what opportunity existed for a girl like her. And how many years now? It's like 6 years later. Now you're seeing Meg's Brap
everywhere. Yeah. And I mean, she was there at the right time. You know, and it would have been a shame if she never monopolized or not monopolized, but like took advantage of the, of that moment.
It was
back the clock. Yeah.
And she's got all the skills. Like she's a great work ethic. Like she's a hardworking person. She's determined. She has drive. I don't know if you know this, but she's an ISDE finisher. So are you familiar with ISDE?
No.
So ISDE, the best way to explain that is it's the Olympics. It's called the International 6 Days event.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like the Olympics of enduro riding. It's held in countries all over the world. And the best Canadian off-road riders go to the Olympics of dirt bike riding, and then they see how they do. And Meg's, I don't know what year it was, but she went and she finished that event, a grueling six days. And I think she had a separated shoulder from a crash, and she still finished it. Like work ethic, determination, drive, tough. Like she's got it all. Yeah, it's brilliant that she's doing what she's doing because she's small statured. She's a woman. Yeah. It says so much. It's like, if she can do it, well, shit, you can do it too. And I don't mean you, but just people in general.
Oh, that's true. I use that metrics a lot of the time. The girls go do something gnarly and I'm in something similar and I'm just like, fuck it. Right. Not like in a pissing contest, but sort of in the mindset that, no, they never let any physical barrier stop them. So why am I? Because, you know, when you ride, you have that little voice. It's always telling you, you shouldn't be doing this. Now is a good time to stop. If you keep going, you're going to die. And so I just find ways to ignore that little voice. And
we just dropped a video about that on Sunday morning called How to Deal with Your Fear. It's basically Facing Your Fear, I think we called it. But it's about that voice.
It's an evil voice. It's a limiting voice because it's really just survival instinct trying to express itself because it knows you well enough to know you're bound to get hurt. It doesn't want to deal with the healing. Yeah. But
it's a good voice.
Yeah, it's a good voice. No, it really keeps the fun out. I try to get my wife not to listen to that voice in her head. We talked about Meg's Grizzly Bait, your connection to Barry down under, and the future of the E-Rag. Is there anything that you want to talk about? Like any?
Man, I can talk forever.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm just trying to think what I'd like to talk about. Oh, I know. We can touch on clubs. So Megan and I did a live video about clubs. Clubs are probably the most boring topic of all time.
Yeah.
Are you involved in a club in Calgary?
The second gear club. I don't know where it's centrally. Yeah.
Yeah, it's out of Calgary.
But yeah, that's a club that I ride with. And they just joined up with AMSA this year for insurance purposes, I guess.
Yeah, that's a great comment to start this. Almost every area that has a dirt riding area or multiple areas usually has a club associated with it. And what people don't realize is that, especially in the world of social media, because you can join an Instagram group or a Facebook group or an online group or a forum, and that's all the community that you'll ever need, because you'll meet a bunch of friends there. You'll find lots of people to go riding on bikes that you like to ride, and you know, compatible riding partners, families, the whole bit.
Yeah.
But what the problem with that is that those organizations don't usually do much governmental work, and they don't usually do much trail maintenance or like stewardship on the trail. But a club like Second Gear Club out of Calgary, and here for me in Kamloops, it's called the GKMA. But there's, you know, these club acronyms all over North America. And the beauty of the clubs is that they do all the boring, dusty, dry work dealing with the government, going to governmental meetings to ensure that our riding rights are protected. And they keep those riding areas open. So I've been volunteering for these clubs for, 10 years at least. And I've seen so many sad stories of when the motorcycle guys aren't organized, or even worse, the motorcycle guy that goes and enjoys the trails on the weekends with his friends and family, and they have a great time, and then they leave, and they never join the club. They don't sign up for a membership to support the club, or they don't even recognize the club's actually doing anything. Now, most of the time, it's through ignorance. You're just like, well, shit, I didn't know. It's not like you're a bad guy. It's just, I didn't know, which that was me, so I understand. But I want to try to spread the word that these clubs exist. They're super important, because if you're not organized, if those clubs are not at the governmental table with the other user groups, and these are all like, you know, catchwords for clubs, user groups and stewardship. But user groups are basically hikers and horseback riders and bird watchers, especially bird watchers, because they do not want to hear motorized vehicles in the forest. And they're sitting at the table and they're lobbying to remove motorized vehicles, and we don't actually have a seat at that table to have a part in that discussion, we don't have a voice. And it's like, man, buy a motorcycle. It's so easy to sign that paperwork when we're not around. And next thing you know, the riding area is closed. And it's like, wow, how did that happen? And then we get all upset and we sign petitions and bang on the table and kick the dog. And it's too late. Like, we should have been organized.
We basically are our own worst enemies. I know that in Alberta, we almost lost a huge riding area. Thankfully, there was a change of government, so the conversation sort of went to the side. But I bet you that's like one of those agenda items that as soon as the government switches back, we'll probably have no problem picking up and running with the ball while everyone's sort of like asleep at the wheel, I guess. Riding groups are a huge, huge thing. Like, we pay membership to Second Gear Club. There's a club out of Rocky Mountain Riders Association. And I give them, because it's like $25, you know, it's not like it's a lot of money. But we go out and we ride in that area and they take care of it. So I just pay the due. And it's pretty, I think it's pretty reasonable. I mean, you pay $80 to $120 to go on a ski hill. You know, like, skiing's fun, but it's not moto. So.
Right. Yeah. And that's per day, not per season. A ski comparison is perfect, because I love comparing downhill skiers and dirt bikers for obvious reasons. Helmets, goggles, gear. It's adrenaline rush. It's technique. It's the same motion. Like, if you're standing up on the pegs of a dirt bike, it's like you're skiing. It's the same thing. Like, it's such a good parallel sport.
Yeah.
Those guys pay $100 a day. And I don't know too many clubs that are over $100 a year.
Yeah,
most are under $100 a year. Yeah, for the family. Bear Creek, which is out of Kelowna, and I know them just because of Meg's. That's her local club. they charge $150, but you've ridden at that area in Kelowna. It's yeah. immaculate. It's amazing. Unbelievable. Yeah. So yeah. I would encourage people to pay your $150. Like it's worth every dime.
Yeah. And they had like a donation day pass kind of thing. And I didn't have any problems paying for it at the time. And I'm glad that I did. And I'd pay it again. I'd be happy to be a member there, but I know I don't get out there very often. So it's not really.
Yeah. Just, I would say to people, just join your local club. I know there's a local club around. Yeah. And even if you, I mean, the first step would be just join, pay your whatever, $30 a year or $80 a year, whatever. And then the second step, if you really, you know, respect what they do, go out for a volunteer, like a trail maintenance day or something. And then you actually get to meet people and be like, oh shit, these are pretty cool people. Although they seem, you know, the club concept itself is a dusty ass concept. It's a bunch of dudes that like actually like running a club. So you're getting a very specific type of person.
Our guy, Jeff, I don't think he likes running a club. I think he feels obligated to, because if he stops, no one will pick up the mantle. And he asks at every event, if anybody wants to be me next year or right now, feel free.
Yeah. He's got to dress better and cut his hair. Maybe people want to be him.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I appreciate the work that he does and everybody does. It's a weird thing to say, but motorsport or dirt biking and racing in a unusual way brought my family closer together. It's just something we all do. We all participate in it. And, you know, just the challenge of it. I don't know. We have stories to share. It just makes camping in the summer something to look forward to. So we love the clubs.
A couple things I can definitely comment on that idea. Mm-hmm. So a couple things I'd say. One, there's no ageism in dirt bikes. So like I've seen Paul Rodden, who is now 80, hang out with a 17-year-old up and coming, and they're sitting outside the lodge where we were, like giggling like schoolgirls, the two of them, having the best time. And I'm like, when do you ever see an 80-year-old man carrying on like their best friends with like a teenager?
Yeah.
Even grandparents. You know, you got to tell your teenage kid, like, you got to go hug granny. I know mm-hmm. she smells funny, but you need to hug her when we first get there. And then they'll hug her in this weird, like,
ass out
woody hug. Way. Yeah. And then it's like, they're gone. And that's it. That's the only relationship they ever have.
So, and everybody comes together as an equal. A bunch of the conversations I've had lately have been with female riders. And I asked them do you ever think that gender plays a role in your success? Or have you found that guys are rude to you because you're a female rider? And by and large, they've said no, like everything's been positive. There are guys that treat them like they have a limited skill set because they're women. But like those guys exist everywhere. The community at large, never. And then I asked, does your bike give a crap what your gender is? Does it do a gender check before it'll let you kick it over? No.
Right.
Ageism and sexism, they do exist, but I don't think it's a huge part of the culture.
And the other thing that I see, you know, so no ageism. The other thing I see is I see teenagers that don't leave their parents when they hit 13. Yeah. So I've seen teens, because of dirt bikes, it's that powerful. The teenagers actually stay close with their parents all the way through until the parents finally cut them off and say, pay for your own damn dirt bike. And then the teens are like, all right, I'm out of here, man.
The family that rides together stays together. Because you have a genuine common interest that's like outside of the house. And it's not like the top-down managerial relationship a lot of families have where, you know, you got to do X, Y, and Z to get love. Just twist the throttle, kid, and we love you. And the kid's like, okay. Because I don't know too many kids that don't like it.
No, man, they love it. And, it's just if you can keep your kid communicating with you through that period when naturally or anthropologically they want to leave anyway. Like they don't want to be with their parents. They want to grow up and figure out who they are. But, man, it's so valuable to have your kid talking to you through that 13 to 20 range.
Yeah. Yeah. My son's 7. He'll be 8 this summer. And it just, I don't know. It's great to see him riding. And we have a little head-to-head communicators. So he's never alone on the bike. I'm not in his head the whole time. But if he needs a hand or some advice or whatever, sometimes I can just tell him from 25 feet away what to do. versus having to go over and bail them out. And I like it more than physically having to help him over an obstacle, because he asks for help less and less, because you give him the instruction, he follows the rule, the, whatever it is, the advice, and then he acts on it and he gets through the barrier versus just going over and doing it for him. And it's been great.
Yeah, it's we've been using those communicators for 10 years and we've been telling people about it. And I don't know why people are resistant to them, but I
the cost.
They're helpful. Here's a hot tip. Amazon has Chinese knockoffs for, I think it's $99 for a pair. So it's like, and they work because we've been using them here for 3 years. We know what dirt bikes are like mud and crap. And they fail, they're disposable. We throw them away and 99. And now we have so many different ones. We probably have 6 or 7 of them here. So if one's not working, just chuck it out. And $99 for two. So
that's good.
It's affordable.
Yeah, there's deals to be had if you're frugal.
Well, when you're riding with family, whether it's your spouse, if that's possible, or your kids, or new riders, people that you're introducing to the sport, having that headset communication, providing that you're not overbearing, not you, but like whoever's
some people would be,
leading. Yeah, whoever's leading, as long as you're not overbearing, it's such an invaluable tool because you can help them mentally through whatever they're going through and they feel like they have like a life preserver, although they don't.
I know they don't. No, you're still riding just like normal.
They're on their own. Yeah. but they feel you instill a lot of confidence when you're right there for them.
Yeah. Well, I found it's great in some of the backwoods areas where you can get 2 minutes or 3 minutes ahead. And then you've taken a couple of right-hand turns and then the person following you doesn't know. And then they're like at a fork in the road and they're lost. And I use Senna. So if I get a certain distance away from you, it starts to get crackly. Yep. And so then I know that I've gone too far. So then I'll just stop right there and ask, are you okay? Like a check-in. And then that's usually when they tell me that they're at the trailhead. They don't know which way to go. So
that's another benefit that no one talks about with those Sennas or whatever, any headset, because they all do the same thing. They start to crackle and get staticky. It's almost like you have a imaginary or invisible elastic band keeping you with your riding partner. So you're right. If you get too far ahead or if they get too far ahead, you both realize that you're really stretching that communications cord and one person has to slow down. Well, I guess one person has to slow down because it's not usually possible or a good idea for the person to speed up.
Yeah, no. Yeah. You can only ride as fast as your slowest rider. You can expect them to get better every time, but you certainly can't outride them. You'll ruin the fun. Nobody wants to be the one always having everybody wait on them. I know it's a pain in the ass to wait on people, but when you're the mentor, you sort of have to accept that. And you got to make the follower never feel that feeling of they're a burden, because one day they're going to be in your seat. And then, if you teach them to feel like a burden, they're going to teach them to feel like a burden, and it'll go on. And then the sport will die.
Yeah. I like that you use the word mentor, and I love mentorship. I love the concept. And I think it's so valuable in off-road motorcycles because the barrier to entry to this sport is so high.
Yeah.
Like it's very difficult to be an absolute green noob and enter the sport and stay because it's so tough. There's so much to learn.
Yeah. It's just intimidating. I can remember when I started, got my bike in the truck and I go off to I went to the track first by myself and just went for a few laps. I was probably only there, I don't know, 40 minutes to an hour. And then I left. Right. I didn't talk to anybody. No one talked to me. Mentorship is probably a great way to describe it. And people need to recognize that they're ambassadors for the culture and they need to be a positive ambassador when they're exposing people from outside to the culture. Change our rock and roll image a bit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, the society dislikes us intensely.
Yeah.
Rightly so. It's always that bad apple syndrome. They're only going to see and remember the kid that did the catwalk down the road and then ran through their tulip garden and kick the dog and, you know, all the bad stuff. And then that's seared in their brains for the rest of their lives. And then when they see Paul Rodden, an 80-year-old gentleman of an engineer, they're still going to go, because we have a mask on. He's got a mask on. You know, they don't realize that he's an 80-year-old, kind, educated man. They just think he's that same 14-year-old kid that tore up their rose garden bushes or whatever. We have to work extra hard to change society's mind, which I don't know if it'll ever happen, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't try.
Yeah, well, one person at a time, right? Like, when I encounter hikers on the trail, I'll stop and talk to them, let them get on the bike, crack the engine up a bit if they want, and just, you know, try to sell them on becoming motorcycle pilots.
Yeah, man, it's such a good thing because they are hellishly intimidated when they hear you in the woods. Like I've talked to hikers and they're like, it's scary because it's quiet. And then all of a sudden it's like a bunch of Vietnam helicopters are coming in. Like it's scary for them. And they think that we're a bunch of killers and rapists and, you know, who knows. And there is no police or security for them. So they get super nervous, especially if it's two women or, you know, a husband, wife. So for you to stop and be like, hey, are you guys okay? Oh, yeah. You know, it does a lot.
I always make sure if they need anything, you know, because if they're in a survival situation, I'm willing to ride down and find them help. Or if I have a way to communicate. Yeah. Just try to be a good guy.
That's all it takes, man. It's so simple.
Yeah. It's too simple. Often the simplest solutions to complex problems are ignored.
It doesn't take much.
No.
And, yeah, it goes a long way. Yeah, I'm big on the community. I'm big on spreading the word about, you know, being a good member of that community. I know it all sounds so like eye-rolly, all these words. It's usually 99% of the time I find dirt bikers, especially the off-road crowd, are just humble, good people. And we just get a bad rap. Megs and I were talking about that the other day, just saying how we were the worst. Like her, I was way worse than her, but like her and I were hooliganism. But it was hooliganism out of ignorance. Like we didn't know that there were rules and there was a way to behave. And when you get on a dirt bike for the first time and you know this, because you're relatively new, man, it's like you go crazy. It's like, woohoo! It's like the craziest, funnest thing you've ever done, and it's completely free.
And you do stupid things.
Exactly. Yeah. You do stupid things. But it's not that you're a bad guy, or I'm a bad guy, or Megs is a bad person. It's just that you're drunk on freedom and fun.
Yeah.
And it's like you're inebriated and you just need somebody like your peer group, like you and I, saying to like, hey, you know what? I know you're having a great time, but like, don't ride on the golf course anymore.
It is a drunk with freedom kind of thing. Like I was thinking the same thing.
And intoxicated. You said it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember riding a super sport bike, down a road. There was nobody around. So I opened it up. You know what I mean? Like, why? Because I could.
Yeah, absolutely.
Took another rider to teach us, young hooligans to be a little more civil. And, then he took us to the track and showed us we could be idiots here. And then that was better. There's a time and a place for everything.
And I think the first step is realizing that you're drunk on fun. Like you're intoxicated on this. And you should be, because it's so addictive. It's so amazing. That's why we all do it. You need to just like realize like, oh yeah, I've had like 7 shots too many. And I just need to like learn how to control that. Which is tough, man. It's tough.
Oh yeah. And for some people, they've never been free before. They had lives that were so structured and stiff that... they've never been in the backcountry. They've never been, and it's just so much stimulation since there is really nobody there to tell them no. Right. Like they're in charge of their own yes and no, and they've probably never been
for the first time ever.
Yeah. So just like let's be fucking crazy.
Yeah, going nuts, man. It's super fun. Like especially you know, I'm country. I mean, if you're Kamloops, you're basically from the country.
Yeah,
and you know, when you're in the country, you have a lot of freedoms that people in urban areas just don't have because they, you know, grow up in a subdivision and there's lots of rules and there's lots of regulations.
Yeah.
Sidewalks are all trimmed and everything has a, you know, but when you're country and you're rural, man, you can light stuff on fire and shoot guns off and like, woohoo, go crazy. So you sort of learn how to control that. You get it out of your system, maybe at a young age.
Yeah. some people can't handle the freedom, so they don't want us to have it.
No, it's the same trend. You know, I was, I guess, lucky enough, if that's the right word. I came from Nova Scotia, so that's, we're from the east.
Yeah.
And we lived in Ontario for 10 years. And that's where I sort of cut my teeth with dirt bikes and like clubs and stuff. But there's so many people in Ontario, you can imagine the pressure on dirt biking, riding areas and dirt bikers.
Yeah.
And exactly what you say is happening. Urbanites are leaving the city. They're selling them homes that they bought 40 years ago for a really good price, and they're moving into the country to retire. And they want it to be or resemble where they came from. And they don't like the freedoms because they don't understand them. And the other thing that's happening is because of technology, because of Elon Musk, we'll just blame him some more. I mean, I love him and hate him at the same time.
Yeah.
Because I can have high-speed internet, like ultra-high-speed internet, and I live off-grid at the top of a mountain, people that live and work in the cities right now, they can leave the city, providing they can do remote work on high-speed internet, and they're going to be moving to the country in droves. I mean, clubs are going to play such an, not to come back and beat this dead horse, but clubs are going to play such an important role because of the phenomenon that's happening.
Yeah.
You guys locally should get organized and get a club and get a seat at the table so they don't take your right to ride away, which they will if they can.
Yeah.
If you let them, I should say.
Yeah, they will. Yeah. Well, they tend to hold these meetings in inopportune times for alternate voices.
Yeah. And what happens because of the dirt bike community, and this is it's a knock on the dirt bike community, and it's a pro of the dirt bike community. And the reason I feel I can say it is because I am built this way. Yeah. I'm independent. I'm stubborn. I don't like authority. I'm quick to fight. And that's a good thing. But because I don't like those things, I often don't want to get involved with a club. I'm not a joiner.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to a council meeting. I don't want to use Robert's rules to hold a meeting. It's like all things that I'm not comfortable with, not only am I not comfortable with it, I dislike it. I actively dislike these things. So the mistake we make as a group is we say, I'm not doing that. And it's the biggest mistake because the city people, they will do it because they know that's how the world works. Because we refuse to, we lose. We need smarter dirt bikers.
The people against us are like a continent, and we are a chain of islands, and we need to be more like a continent.
We need to get together and support each other, get the numbers up in some sort of an organization. Here's another example of that same thing. I remember when mountain bikes were actually introduced. Like, isn't that a bicycle? No, that's a mountain bike. It's like, what's the difference? I was 13 or 14, so that was like in the mid-80s, say. That was the new thing coming out of California, mountain bikes. Think about that sport was just invented in the 80s, and think about how organized mountain bike community is. It's crazy how clubs, and they're on it, man. And like, if you want to try to fight with the mountain bikers, they got their shit together. Like, they're organized, and they'll go to the meetings, and they'll write proposals, and they'll do the Roberts rules, first motion, second motion. They'll play that game, and they're doing really, really well.
We could steal a little bit of that.
Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't make us less a man to show up at a governmental meeting and sit at the table and be civilized.
No, not even. We need some strong advocation. And I think if I want my kid to be able to do what I'm doing at my age, myself and a lot of other guys are going to have to pull up their pants.
I just had this conversation this morning. I was on the phone with a friend and a client that comes from Ontario. And he said that the women that are involved in their club, they run that club. Like, they made a woman the president, and she does things. She actually does what she says she's going to do and come back with all the work done. And it's like, you give a guy that task, and he's like, the dog ate it, and my truck broke down, and, you know, I had to work overtime, and sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, yeah, no problem, man.
I'm just a volunteer. What do you expect? It's not like I'm getting paid for this. Like,
exactly. Exactly. Like... But the women, man, they take it more seriously than we do.
Yeah.
And they follow through on their word, which is crazy because we're supposed to be the honorable, like, my word is bond guys. But we some things we just get a pass for.
We're just fucking grown children. We aren't any better than we were when we were born. We can say more things and we can cause more damage.
I don't shit in my diaper anymore.
Yeah. All right. Well, I got to let you go here. It's really been good talking to you. I look forward to talking to you again, if you don't mind.
Yeah, and no, man. I'm here. It makes it real easy with technology.
Heck yeah. Like, yeah, this in less time than the drive, we've already had a huge talk.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the invite. And yeah, let me know when you're going to post it and how you're going to post it and all that stuff. And
I'll send it along.
I'll let my gang know.
Sweet. That's awesome. And yeah, all the best to you. And I hope that the digital version of your digital email or your digital magazine is as successful as the e-reg. Like, yeah.
We shall see.
All right. I'll talk to you soon, Dallas.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. I want to thank my guests for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. A special thank you to you, my supporters. Without you, this would not be possible. If you enjoyed the show, give it a 5-star rating. And if you haven't already, be sure to like, subscribe, and share. If this is your first time listening, I encourage you to take the 3-episode challenge. Once again, thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to find out what's coming up next time.